Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. I am sitting here alone in the Cleveland studio because Steve is calling in from Las Vegas. How's it going out there? I'm fine. How are you?
Good, man. I had a rough night last night, but not...
Not the good Vegas way.
Not in a hangover-style fashion. Got some bad calamari at the restaurant we went to, and it did a number on me. So I took it easy last night, but... I feel like a new man today, and so there's a hockey game. The Las Vegas Golden Knights play, and then Manny Pacquiao is fighting at the MGM Grand, which I'm not going to the fight because tickets are, you know, $300 for a seat in outer space.
Really?
Yeah, they're. I mean, we looked at them, and the cheapest ticket we could find was like $300, and like it's a terrible view. And my vision's already not good, so that's not going to work. But we'll just go down and be in the general vicinity of the fight and all that stuff. So it'll be a good time.
There should be some serious energy going around.
Yeah. I'm excited about it. So you know that'll probably yield a different type of rough night story.
Right, the good kind of rough night story.
Yeah.
Before we get into anything else, want to do a prediction on the fight?
You know, it probably ends up going the distance. I think it ends up being a decision in favor of Pacquiao. Like, Adrian Broner he doesn't really have knockout power, but, you know, Pacquiao doesn't either. And I think I think there's a chance that Pacquiao could maybe take down Broner just based on conditioning. Right, like you get into the, you know, eighth, ninth round, and I think Pacquiao may be a little bit better conditioned than Adrian Broner. He may be able to catch him while he's tired, but I don't think that'll happen, and I think it ends up being a decision, a judge's decision for Pacquiao.
I was going to say the same thing, only I would not say Pacquiao doesn't have power, knockout power. I would say he doesn't have it like he used to.
Okay, when's the last time he's knocked someone out?
I said like he used to.
We're saying the same thing.
Okay.
You got to be a smartass. No, here we go.
Being clear. I don't know when the last time he knocked someone out. I think his last fight he knocked somebody out, although I don't know who it was. Because I think it was his first knockout in 9 years in his last fight.
Right, but that person, but I mean, he was also fighting
Glass Joe. All right, so before we get into, let's just get right into it. Michael Cohen, according to BuzzFeed, has said that, or testified, that he was essentially ordered to lie to Congress on Trump's behalf by Trump.
Okay, and so right off the bat, I think we have to talk about the veracity of the article because, listen, there's been a number of news stories put out about this Mueller investigation. The Mueller investigation, people from his team, they haven't said anything about any number of stories that have come out, or they usually just say no comment. This is the first story that they've come out and said there are things in this article that are not true and that are not accurate.
Right.
So, I mean, I think you can only give so much credibility. I don't know if I can give, you really can't give any credibility to this because of that.
Right. No, definitely, I'm not banking on anything. I will say this. I heard, so I was doing my thing at home the other day, and I watched a clip from the Young Turks, and Cenk Uygur was beside himself with joy over what he is convinced was the final nail smoking gun for the Trump administration. Bill Maher, to his credit, talked about it last night, but was reserved about it, basically saying, if this is a smoking gun, if this is accurate, then we must impeach. And his panel, including Barney Frank, said, "Don't bother. It's not worth it. He won't be convicted, and all you'll do is fire up his base for 2020." And when Barney Frank is saying that, that tells you something.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's just, I mean, it's what I've said all along. Like, I mean, one, again, we don't know that, like, this doesn't seem, something stinks about this, because like I said, the Mueller team hasn't said anything about a number of things that have been reported, but this, they come out and deny and say, listen, this isn't accurate or this isn't true. So you start with the veracity of the whole topic, and that should kind of be the end of it. But going back to impeaching Trump, you know, I've said all along that unless you have a videotape of, you know, an actual videotape where it's him and Putin in a room or some high ranking Russian official in a room plotting and scheming, you know, the takeover of the United States, short of an actual smoking gun and proof of some of the things that he's been accused of, it's just a bad play politically to do it. All it's going to do is exactly what you just said, fires up the base, it drives an even deeper, longer line in the sand, and it causes more problems than it solves, and it doesn't, it ends because Trump wouldn't be impeached. They wouldn't convict him. It obviously creates a division amongst that already exists. It just makes that division wider. And it sets it up so that Trump gets reelected again in 2020. That's all it does.
Well, speaking of which, I mentioned I was watching Bill Maher last night. His opening guest was John Kasich, who made it very clear that he is still not happy with the Trump administration, and that he is exploring the possibility of running as a Republican in 2020. Now, I don't know. I mean, he basically said he won't run unless he's convinced he's going to win. And I don't know what appetite the Republican Party will have for a primary. My guess is none. But it's interesting that a guy with the potential impact of John Kasich could have. Now, having said that, I'm talking about a potential impact of a guy who got like 3% of the primary vote in 2016.
I don't know why this infatuates you so much.
I'm a huge John Kasich fan.
Okay, I get it, but I guess I don't get it because there's no way that he could win, right? Like, I mean, I think maybe he's putting feelers out there, but I mean, you just referenced the fact that he only got 3% of the primary vote last time around. He does not move people at all. Republicans really aren't a big fan of him because Trump has taken over the Republican Party for the most part. And so because he hasn't backed Trump, like a lot of the people that would have likely voted for him in the past view him as a traitor. And so he's not going to steal anybody away from Trump. I don't think that you would get he's not going to get any people on the progressive left to vote for him. You know, he's not a type where you're not going to see anybody on the left make the move to say, all right, let's throw our support behind this guy because this guy can get Trump out.
Right? Like, I disagree with that. Well, Bill Maher did it yesterday.
Yeah, but I mean, Bill Maher, like, you'll get some loud voices, but it's not going to be the masses. I mean, like, there'll be a lot of people who yell and scream a lot, but ultimately, like, you're not going to see the numbers shift to the point where he would actually be successful. So, I think it's a pipe dream. I think it's something that people who really dislike Trump love to hang on to the idea of it. But, I mean, he'd be walking into a bloodbath, like, just plain and simple. Like, he would get annihilated, and it would pretty much be over before it began. And okay. I think he knows that. Which is why he put the disclaimer in, I'm only going to run if I can win. And in about, 2 months, he'll go ahead and say that he's not going to run.
We can put a wager on that. I think he will be relevant up until the end of the year.
Sure.
And what's that?
Sorry, I almost did something terrible.
Oh, okay.
On my end, don't worry.
Okay. I thought you said bullshit. I'm like, okay, you disagree with me. You want. Anyway, I'm a fan of John Kasich just because I think he's got the right experience. He's very secular. He's not one of these guys who wants to wave his religion in your face and act. You know, he's basically the total not Mike Pence. He's logical, secular.
I don't know. I mean, I think you... I don't think you remember when John Kasich was on Fox. You know, he was a very put his religion in your face sort of guy, and he's not very... I mean, maybe he's mellowed some, you know, seeing Trump and disagreeing with him, so maybe he himself has come back to the middle over the last couple of years. But again, he's just not the guy. He doesn't have the look, he doesn't have the demeanor, and his politics aren't great on anything. So I just, there's not going to be a mandate for him.
Well,
okay.
I would say that his calm demeanor is maybe going to be reviewed as a refreshing change after what we've seen for the last election cycle.
Well, we'll do two things. One, we'll bet.
All right. Since
I'm in a betting mood, because I'm in the land of betting. Let's bet on if he actually runs. You know, and then from there we can bet on, you know, margin of defeat afterwards if he decides to run.
Okay, we can straighten that out when you get back to town. The other story that got a lot of play this week, and this is exactly what's wrong with our media. Well, one of the many things that's wrong with our media. So the Clemson Tigers won the national championship. They went to visit the White House, and because the White House kitchen staff is furloughed, they got an array of fast food and pizza, which is hilarious to me, but it's completely not newsworthy. I mean, it's something that you and I should have a blast laughing about at a bar, and the fact that he misspelled hamburgers also really funny. But it's, if it was 2 minutes on the news one time, or 2 minutes of the 24-hour news cycle, I'd say fine. It's funny. It's, you know, typical, you know, hey, this is Trump. Look, he tweeted this and screwed it up, and the dude likes his fast food, despite being the healthiest man ever to walk into the White House. But the fact that it went on for days is a reflection of our entertainment first, value second media, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think we, most sensible people agree that it was stupid that it was such a new, the type of news story that it was. You know, you had plenty of people, you know, on the left who were turning this into, he made it a racial issue, right? Like, I mean, he's feeding them fast food, and, you know, these kids don't, you know, like, the colleges work really hard to teach these kids how to eat because they come from homes that don't know anything about food, and then the president derails it with this fast food meal. Like, come on.
That's a bit of a stretch.
It's insane. Like, I mean, there were people out there who were literally throwing this garbage out, and it goes to just the, you know, the media's disdain for Trump and their thirst for, you know, finding flaws with this guy, you know, to amplify them and put it out just because he's so in their face, right? And
right.
I mean, and I think that him calling the media the enemy of the people, I think it's dangerous. But to his point, this is the type of shit that he's talking about. And this is the sort of thing where the media can't get out of its own way when, you know, I think there is, people are starting to demand the media be more objective, and they're just refusing to do it. And this is a prime example of it. I thought it was hilarious. There's a show on HBO called Veep, and there was an episode very similar to this where there was a government shutdown, and, you know, the star of the show, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, was supposed to get an award at the White House, and then, you know, they just show the White House kitchen staff, like, packing up the party and moving out because they're furloughed, right? And I mean, and this is kind of this is real life imitating art. But I mean, that's kind of where it stopped for me. Like, I didn't care. Like, I mean, these kids they're college kids. You know, I mean, people act like these kids have never seen a hamburger before, and it's going to completely disrupt their, you know, master
right.
DNA. Like, it's insane. Like, these kids, like, I played on a Division I college football team, and yes, we did have special places to eat, and we had prepared food and everything else. But, you know, we also got, on Friday night before the game, like, after we ate a very delicious prepared meal, they would deliver pizzas to our hotel room to make sure that we had a reason to stay in our room and didn't try to sneak out. Right. We got Domino's everywhere we went, except for one time we had to get Pizza Hut. I mean, let's not. I mean, right. It's insane to think that these kids, you know, I mean, especially, have you seen some of the linemen on that Clemson team? Like that's not all Whole Foods and Sprouts and
they're not strangers to a big. They're not strangers to a Big Mac. That's for sure.
Right. So yeah. I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal, and
it was funny.
You know. Anyway, go ahead.
The funniest thing about it was I was listening to a local radio show, and they said that the gravy boats were filled with McNugget dipping sauces, and one of the co-hosts on the show thought that someone had to tear the tops off of each of the packets and pour them into the gravy boats. In fact, just packets were strewn in there, but I thought that was the concept of someone tearing the top off a sweet and sour sauce and pouring it into a gravy boat for chicken McNuggets was hilarious to me.
Well, yeah, and we've long determined that your sense of humor is not good. So
you're entitled to your incorrect opinion.
Once again, Jim stands alone.
I do not. I'm a funny guy, and I know it. Anyway, so did you see the Gillette ad? I know we talked about it, or I saw you wrote something about it, and I assume you saw the whole thing. And go ahead. Okay, was badly delivered. But
so, yeah. I mean, not only did I write something about it, I put the commercial, I embedded the commercial in the story that I wrote.
I flubbed the segue. I get it.
So, yeah, I saw it, and I think that, you know, there was a stir about it. I mean, I think, first of all, I don't like corporations doing these PSA announcements that they do. You know, I mean, you know, Nike did it with Colin Kaepernick. You know, Gillette is doing it here with this Me Too commercial. I've just never been a fan of, you know, corporations saying, you know, this is what you should do. This is how you should feel, right? Like, I just feel that they should just sell me your product and let me figure the rest out on my own. But that being said, like, this commercial, it was just a commercial. And, you know, there are people who there, you know, a lot of your conservative white men are all up in arms about it. You know, James Woods is all over Gillette saying he's throwing away all his Gillette razors and, you know, the whole thing against toxic masculinity, the pushback. And now there's a war on men, and all these men are claiming to be victims and feeling that they're, you know, like they're being specifically called out. And I guess to my point, first of all, the commercial, when you watch it, it's usually men checking other men. And I think that is something you can't ignore, right? I mean, I think we can't ignore that there's an issue with the way that people behave, right? I mean, you have how many counts of domestic violence and how many counts of rape, I mean, that we know of that doesn't even include what's not reported. So there is an issue with certain men who are behaving very badly. And when you see some of the, you know, warning signs of that behavior, I think that those men need to be checked, and they need to check themselves. I don't think there's any issue with calling that out. You know, if you see, you know, a little boy, you know, a group of little boys chasing one boy and they beat the kid up, which happens, that sort of behavior needs to be stopped. Right, that's not okay. That's bullying. That's the exact definition of bullying, and that shouldn't be allowed to happen. And that boy getting beat up by other boys doesn't make that kid a better boy. You know, to the people who are defending that sort of behavior, well, it'll teach the kid to be tough. Like, no, that's actually not going to teach the kid to be tough. I think there's no evidence of, you know, 5-on-1. You know, somehow that makes that one boy that much tougher. Who knows what it does to him, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's a recipe for the kid to be tough. So I guess I don't really have a problem beyond the fact that I don't like corporations telling us how to feel. At the same time, I don't have an issue with the commercial as a man. That commercial to me wasn't directed at me. And I guess it didn't offend me. I just saw it as, you know, this is, I guess, them trying to, you know, show that, hey, we're here for the Me Too movement as well. I think anytime you see commercials like this, they come off a little bit insincere. But to the men out there who feel offended by it and that want to claim their victimhood, that those are the guys that you want to tell, just shut up. You know, because most of the guys who are really complaining about this, most of them are actually good guys. Right, they're not abusive, they're not bullies, they treat the women with respect, and they're saying, well, I feel like it's calling me out and I haven't done anything wrong. well, if you haven't done anything wrong, then you shouldn't see it as it calling you out. You should just see it as, hey, if you do see this, then you call it out, right? Then you make sure that you're helping, like you're raising your son and or daughter the right way. And if you see someone being an asshole, then, you know, step in and say, hey, stop being an asshole, right? Like, I mean, I'm not sure why you have to take offense to it, but people are choosing to.
I agree. And I'm with you that I don't like when corporations come out with this either. And my main reason for not liking it is I know that you do ads to try to make more money. I know that, you know, the soul of a corporation, and there are exceptions, but they're few and far between, are entirely driven by making money. So what is Gillette doing that they think is going to make them money out of this? I mean, because they're number one. Well, I don't know what their sales numbers between men and women are. And I can tell you this, I use Gillette products all the time. They're very good. That's why I use them. If they sucked, I would not use them, and I wouldn't start using them because they made a profound statement on a two-minute ad that was only run on the internet and we'll probably see in the Super Bowl if I had to bet, at least in some.
I stopped using Gillette products a while ago. I switched over to the Dollar Shave Club because I just got tired of paying the prices for them, actually. And so, you know, the Dollar Shave Club was just a way better deal. And, you know, the razors, no, they're not, I don't think they're as good as Gillette, but I was willing to sacrifice it just because the cost was, you know, I mean, I spend $25 a year and I have all the razors that I need, you know, for a year, where to buy the same number of razors through Gillette, you know, would have cost me $100, you know, so, which is, you know, pennies when you really think about it, but there's just no reason for me to spend, you know, $50 on a box of razors. But I'm just going to throw away the heads anyway, you know?
Right. I mean, we both shave our heads, so we both go through razors. Buying razors is one of the things I like best about Costco is buying razors. I'll buy them in massive amounts and they'll last me for a very long time, but you're buying 16, 32 of them, whatever.
I just got tired of doing that. That's like I said, so I switched over to Dollar Shave Club, and this commercial isn't going to make me switch back to Gillette. You know, so, and I think there's certain people that are just going to be pissed about this commercial just because they hate, you know, they hate everything about the progressive movement.
Right.
Like, so there's certain people who are just going to push back against anything that they perceive or that they feel is pushing to the left. Right. Like, so there's some people that are just going to be pissed off about this no matter what. And you know what? I mean, which is fine. I mean, I'm not really worried about them because those are the same people that were pissed off about that Nike Colin Kaepernick commercial, and they've since forgot about it. You know, I mean, Nike's doing just fine. It gave them that whole thing gave them a massive boost, and Nike's done fine. That the boycott against Nike didn't hurt Nike at all. You know, the only thing that's really hurt Nike is, you know, some of the stuff going on in China. But, I mean, still, I mean, the company, if you look at it year over year, if you even look like 6 months, like, they're still just head and shoulders above everyone else. So, you know, the people who were pissed about Nike are now pissed about a Gillette commercial. And then 3, 4, 5, 6 months, they'll be pissed about something else. They'll completely forget about it, move on. They'll start buying Gillette razors again, and it'll just be a blip on the radar, you know?
How many YouTube videos are there of guys lighting Gillette razors on fire right now?
You know what's funny? Somebody actually put a picture on Twitter of them throwing their whole entire Gillette razor thing in the toilet. And I mean, it just,
you know, I love that so much.
It never fails that, like, there's just always an idiot, right? And then, but like, so I saw, like, I followed James Woods on Twitter, because, you know, and it's funny that, you know, a little off topic, but it's funny that he was so up in arms about this. Like, James Woods, some of the characters that he's played in movies have been, like, the definition of toxic masculinity. Like, his character in Casino was just a complete and utter scumbag.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like that, and that character is based off of not some guy in particular, but how many guys like that are there in the city that I'm in right now, you know, right. I mean, that are just, you know, pimping girls out and treating them like shit and treating them like whores and actually legitimately treating them like whores. Like, those people actually exist. And the Gillette commercial was like, those are the guys that need to be called out, put on blast. And, you know, like, and those guys start off as kids, right? And so right. if we raise the kids to be better, then maybe they don't grow up to be James Woods' character in Casino. You know, I mean, like, I mean, that's kind of, that's what the commercial is saying. You know, now people are going to get pissed about it and say, no. You know, the progressive left is trying to make all dudes soft and gay and everything else, which, I mean, okay, maybe they are. And listen, you know, the best way to avoid it is that if you don't like dick, don't suck one, and then don't have one put in your ass, and you'll be okay.
Which is why you don't work in advertising.
True.
You know, I was watching Anchorman the other day, and Anchorman is kind of like a flashback of here's how much sexism and inappropriate behavior used to be considered acceptable in the office, and this was mostly towards white men my age and older, where the resentment comes in with, I used to be able to act this way and everyone said it was okay, why isn't it okay now? Well, it wasn't okay then, it just didn't get called out. Now that it's getting called out, deal with it, because that's the way it should have been back in 1980, 1950, 19 whatever. It just wasn't. And that's right. Progress, that's us growing as a society.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just it. Like, I mean, the whole idea of, you know, why can't I say this and why can't I do this? I should be allowed to say and do whatever I want. Like, okay, well, to a degree you can, but please understand that there's just consequences, and you don't like the consequences. Like, if you want to slap a woman on the ass in the office, like, then you can. But one, she may turn around, roundhouse you in the face and knock you out because just more and more women are taking, you know, you're seeing them involved in self-defense and everything else. And two, you probably lose your job. You probably get sued. And that's just the way it works, you know. So it's real simple. Keep your hands to yourself. You know, I mean, and I don't get, you know, the resistance against it. I don't understand why that's such a hard concept for men to understand. You know, I like tits and ass just as much as the next guy, right? But, you know, I just would never put my hands on one, you know? Like, you just don't do it.
It's about consent and time and place, right? Like, I saw someone on Facebook put up something where, like, Gillette, and it showed that commercial, and then it said also Gillette, and it showed chicks in bathing suits with Gillette written across their asses. And that was intended to show, look at the hypocrisy of Gillette. The difference is, those are models who are... Yes, they're using their sexuality to try to sell a product, this just in, but it's a consensual thing that they're trying to do. It's not them trying to be professionals and being harassed and mistreated in the office or in public. If it's consensual and welcomed, game on. If it's not, leave it the fuck alone. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
And the 40, 50-something white men who are feeling so abused need to quit being such pussies. Sorry.
Yeah.
And I mean,
right. I mean, it just, it's, you know, it's amazing because they talk about how, I mean, it's the same, but it's so bizarre, right? Like, these are the same guys that are, you know, Second Amendment right advocates, and they're, you know, they're gun guys, and they're, you know, patriots and everything else. And then, like, they get, you know, they complain about people being victims, right? Black people and women and all this other stuff. And now it's just a tit for tat thing. It's like, you know what? I want to be a victim too. You can't target me. And so if you're going to complain, then I'm going to complain about this. Like, it's,
yeah.
I mean, we saw the same thing with the Black Lives Matter movement, right? Like, well, all lives matter. How are you saying that your life matters more than mine? No one's saying that your life doesn't matter, but you guys are saying that mine doesn't matter when I can get shot for no goddamn reason. And a guy who actually shoots someone doesn't get shot, right? Like, I mean, or
doesn't get punished for it. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean,
but yeah, I mean, so, you know, with the commercial, I wasn't a fan of it just because corporations tell me how to feel, blah blah blah. But at the same time, commercial wasn't an attack on me. And if there's a guy out there who believes that they were being attacked by that commercial, then I, you know, just shut up and grow a set. That's all I can say.
Agreed. Speaking of not getting punished for killing black people, Officer Van Dyke was sentenced this week. I got the alert from CNN about 2 minutes after you sent me a notification, and I initially thought I misread your text. So, I He was sentenced to roughly 6 years in prison for second-degree murder and 16 counts of aggravated assault. I assume we're in agreement that that seems incredibly light.
Yeah, and this is what, in, you know, you remember we talked about what, when he was found guilty, and you were talking about sentencing, and I said it was either going to be, like, this is likely how it would turn out, right? Like, because of the range of what you can find for second degree murder, and then, you know, you were looking at the number of assault
right.
Counts, and it was, are they going to run
concurrent or consecutive?
Or consecutively, and so they're doing it all concurrently, right? Like, so it's he's going to be in there for 6 years, and he's going to, like, all the assault counts are being run concurrently, so at the same time, you know, so whatever the, you know, if it's 2 years for, you know, a count, then, like, two of his years over the course of this 6 year sentence are going to be for the assault counts, and then the other four will be for the second degree murder. And while it's good that he's no longer a cop, and it's you know, the family may feel some sort of justice, I guarantee you the family does not feel that this is fair, right? Because right. The family is going to look at this and say, my son, brother, cousin, whatever, is gone forever, and this cop loses, you know, the job that he obviously had a connection to, and he's going to go to prison for the 6 years, but after that 6 years, he's going to get some semblance of his life back, and my son doesn't. And I guarantee you that family is going to feel, you know, that they're not going to feel vindicated. They're going to, that there's an empty feeling with this whole thing. And I can't tell you what's right. You know, I mean, I can't tell you how that family should feel. I can't tell you if they, you know, should they be happy that he's in jail and was found guilty? They should probably be happy with that, or maybe they shouldn't, because ultimately none of it brings their family member back.
Right.
They just don't know. There's just nothing that can fill that void that's gone. And the kid had some mental issues, but he didn't deserve to die. And there's just nothing that really fixes it. You know, that's the sad part.
We've seen what it takes for a cop to get convicted of a shooting. This one was really, really, really bad in terms of, you know, his ability to claim that he was protecting himself or others. And the fact that the charges are what they were and the sentence is what it is. And I don't know how this works, but if he's sentenced to roughly 6 years, does that mean he could be out in three?
So it's not a federal crime. So it all depends on how the state of Illinois, how they handle it. You know, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you get a day for a day or whatever it works. So I don't know. And I don't even know if that's on the table, to be honest. I haven't looked at it. So,
okay. Well, I mean,
the potential could be there for him to be out earlier, but the judge can also, I mean, they can also deny that, you know, so.
And I know I'm saying 6 years like it's nothing. I don't think I'd last 6 minutes in prison, but still, it seems awful light given the nature of the conviction.
Listen, I think any time in jail, it's enough to change a person, and usually not for the better.
Right.
So, I mean, it's going to impact him. But the question is, you know, what does that do for the family? You know, I mean, and I guess in part of my concern would be, you know, the, you know, with him getting out, let's say he did get out in less than 6 years, you know, maybe he gets out in four because of good behavior, time served, all that stuff. You know, the one fear you would have is a family member trying to take retribution, you know?
Right.
You know, and that's something that I think is real in a case like this, because we don't see a lot of police get convicted. You know, and the few that we have seen get convicted, The cop that killed Walter Scott, like, he's going away for a long time. You know, that was just so bad. I mean,
right.
He shot the guy in the back, for Christ's sake.
While he was running away.
While he was running away. But it's amazing that it's got to be that blatant. And that's the big thing about what the Black Lives Matter movement was. A big part of it was, listen, these people aren't perfect, and there's no perfect victim, but there's got to be some accountability for taking someone's life, and it can't just be swept under a rug because the cop utters the words, "Well, I feared for my life." Right? Like, there's got to be more accountability. We should want more accountability from the people that we task with this giant responsibility of, you know, enforcing the laws, right?
Right.
Like, we give them a gun and a badge. And so, you know, having state sanctioned murder, there should be a higher degree of analysis when that happens, you know? And so it shouldn't just be, well, we'll take the guy off the street, we'll marinate on it for a little bit. And then once all the hubbub dies down, we'll give the guy back his gun and his badge and put him back on the street. Like, there just needs to be more accountability when a police officer takes a life, and especially under circumstances that are, you know, highly questionable and on video.
Right. Yeah, there's no speculation in the two cases we've talked about. Like, we saw Walter Scott get shot in the back. We saw Laquan McDonald get gunned down while surrounded by police, walking at an angle. And I did see, excuse me, my voice is going. I did see that there are more officers now facing potential charges for the cover-up and things like that. So this case may not be over yet, but with regards to former Officer Van Dyke, we know what happens with him.
Yeah.
And then there was one other thing that I sent you an article, and it was one of those things that really shook me up because it happened around here. It happened in Toledo. There's a GM plant in Toledo, and a couple of Black employees were reporting that they were being, you know, harassed and threatened. And when you read the article, it shows that people were doing things like putting a noose out, like, on display, threatening them with lynching, which obviously has its historical horrors associated with it. Racial insults, racial slurs. The one guy was in management, and I got the impression that it was, kind of a resentment thing. And that speaks to two things in my mind. One, just the general culture of where I wish we weren't anymore as a country, but we're still obviously not where I would hope. And then also, when employees have the protection of a union, where the union views its only job is no one can ever get fired for anything, that creates an environment that if those people exist, they know they can do this shit with impunity, and it's bad. I sent you the article. I don't know if you took the same thing away from it that I did, but that's what I took from it.
Yeah, I mean, and so that argument about unions, what a lot of people will say that, listen, because of the protection of the unions, that's why we saw the quality of cars, of American cars, go down for so long, because, you know, the work was poor. The people, like, literally the people putting the cars together were doing a sloppy job. And so, but they couldn't get fired. Like, there was just nothing that you could get fired for, short of showing up to work drunk and high. And even then, I mean, these are real stories from Lordstown, where people would immediately go to, well, I need help. I need to go to rehab, things like that. But once they kind of invoke that it's a medical issue, then, you know, they can't be fired. Now, I'm not pro fire people. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not advocating
right,
for people
either.
To lose their jobs, but if they're performing poorly and they're doing things that are, you know, violating, you know, written codes of conduct, then there's got to be some form of punishment. And if there's not, then it facilitates, you know, poor quality of work, and then, you know, in the actual work that they're doing, and then it allows, you know, environments like this to fester.
And it's one thing when it's poor performance on the job, which I'm not, again, not defending that at all. But when there is threatened violence and other, you know, inappropriate behavior towards other employees, I mean, the union should be protecting them too. Right. I used to work in a plant outside of Buffalo, and one of my friends from that job had come up through the GM plant in North Tonawanda. And he told me stories, and these were completely this wasn't me, like, you know, trying to do a deep dive. I didn't like seek these stories out. We were having lunch one day and he was telling me about the culture there. And he basically said that because of this, you know, and this union culture where people know nothing can happen to them, he said women working on the production floor typically lasted about 3 days because they would get sexually harassed, physically touched in ways they didn't want to be touched so much, so quickly, that they would say, fuck this, I'm not doing it anymore. He told me another story about a guy who, rather than do his job, built a little, like a shack or whatever, to sell like a vending shack, and he undercut the prices of the vending machines by a little bit. So rather than do his job, he's doing a side hustle, selling Snickers and cans of Coke. That guy had a dispute with one of his other coworkers. The other coworker, as retribution, destroyed his vending shack, and neither of them got fired. I mean, come on. I'm not for people getting fired either, especially working class people trying to do a job. But for fuck's sake, how much worse than that can you get? Oh, yeah, you can put a noose on someone's workspace.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's an overall culture problem. And maybe it's the union, and maybe it's just, but it seems like, you know, a couple of these GM plants have serious culture problems that need to be addressed
right
from the top down, you know, and maybe it's because of the union, or maybe it's just overall oversight. It just needs to be better.
Right.
In terms of the people that are in charge, is that Toledo plant? Is that one of the ones that's being closed?
I don't know. That never helps the culture. But the North Tonawanda stories I was telling you about, you shouldn't need to be told that behavior is inappropriate, even if you know that you can do it and get away with it. You should also have the basic common sense to say this is not appropriate, and yet they don't. So, and we're talking again a small percentage. But the reason the union shouldn't be sticking up for those people is because they are a small percentage and they are violating codes of conduct. And I'm not even calling for a zero tolerance policy here. I'm saying there's got to be some consequence for things like that. There just has to be.
Yep.
All right. Go ahead.
All right. No. I'm good. I'm done. I got it.
All right, you're in Vegas. Enjoy Vegas. I will go get my car out, my truck out from under the 4 inches of snow that have fallen since we started talking. And
are you serious? Wow.
Yeah, it's slow but steady, but it's coming down. It's going to be a nasty roads, and I got to go do a family thing. But
right. But
enjoy Vegas, Steve. I'm not jealous at all.
Yeah, no, sun is bright, shiny here. It's not too hot. It's about 55 degrees at the moment. So I think I'm going to go, actually I'm going to go work out.
You do that. You do that. All right, man. All right. Good talking to you.
Later.